To order, Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. Members are a little slow this morning, this afternoon, they're dribbling in as things ratchet up here at the legislature, but so we want to make sure we have a good group before us. Members, to just talk about what we're doing today, and then next week, today, we're going to have a presentation by Representative Ward and folks from the Brainerd area on rural early childhood programs, and then we're going to have a presentation by Representative Gottwald, and he has a group in from the Minnesota Initiative Foundation. So for all of us from the metro area, I know we're probably going to learn a lot, as well as all the members, because we have a number of funding proposals and bills about the different areas before us. And just to say, on Tuesday we will be hearing bills, so watch for a notice about that. And then Thursday next week, we're doing the off-site hearing at the Hub Center about adult basic ed. So I hope everybody's going to be able to make that. I think that will be very interesting. Let me take care of just a little bit of business here. We have a quorum. Let's see. Representative Eastland, have you read the minutes?
No, I have not, but I will move that we approve them as written.
Okay. Representative Eastland moves the minutes for February 13th. Any discussion?
I learned that in preschool, that you don't lie.
Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. And with that, we'd like to welcome Representative Ward to the committee with his testifiers, and we very much appreciate, we know you've come from a long distance being here today for this hearing, and so we can learn more about your community and your early childhood programs. Representative Ward, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Chair Stalwart, members, thank you very much for having us today. I didn't have to come very far. I'm just 2 blocks south of the Capitol, but the rest of our constituency did, and we appreciate. And I want to start with that. Thank you very much for the opportunity for our Brainerd folks to come and testify today with our early childhood family ed child care collaborative and cooperative. And with you today, I want to introduce them to you and just tell you who they are, and they will talk about themselves and who they are also as well. To my left, your right, is Tammy Filippi, and she will explain her position. And then to her left is Steve Rizzidlo. He is the assistant superintendent of the Brainerd School District. And then on the far end is Connie Nelson, director of the Early Childhood Family Ed program in the Brainerd School area. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to testifiers who are here to talk about our program and our needs and our program.
If you represent Ward, do you think we're allocating about 45 minutes, about 40 minutes since we started a little bit late. Do you think we'll have some time for questions too?
Yes, we've talked this out, and we have about a 25 to 30 minute presentation.
Yes, we do.
And then about 10 minutes for questions, if that's okay.
But that would work great, and I hope the members will think of good questions to ask to the testifiers. So with that, welcome to the committee. You could state your name for the record.
Sure, I'll start. Steve Rizzidlo, Assistant Superintendent of the Brainerd Schools, and Madam Chair, members, thank you for allowing us to be here from Brainerd today.
I'm Connie Nelson. I'm the Director of the Early Childhood Family Ed and School Readiness Program for the Brainerd School District, and Madam Chair and members, thank you also for allowing us to be here today.
Good morning. No, just kidding. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Tammy Filippi. I'm the coordinator of the Brainerd Lakes Early Childhood Coalition. Wonderful to be here.
And thank you. We would like to walk you through a brief presentation and allow some time for question and answers, as has already been indicated. Our presentation is entitled Celebrating the Innocence of Childhood, and we do hope to give an overview of some of the programs and some of the services that we offer in central Minnesota in the Brainerd Lakes area. We would like to begin by making comment about some of the presentation that Art Rolnick and Rob Grunewald have made around the state of Minnesota over the last 4 years. And note for everyone's record today that we are unaware of any other economic development effort that has as much possible yield to it and as much possible benefit to the public as investment in early education programs for children. We know that our brain research, our ongoing action research in Brainerd, and that which we read and study from around, tells us that language acquisition in early childhood is key to the success of our students in school. The gap between our high achievers and our low achievers is a language and an experience gap. It's our responsibility, we feel, to close that gap, and certainly that's supported by research as well. What we feel our young kids in Minnesota, outstate and the metro certainly need is that support that comes in not only the intellectual and the academic realm, but nutritional, medical, emotional support that is extended not only from our wonderful parents and our wonderful communities, but extended through the services that are provided through our public and our private endeavors. And we have noticed, and we would want you to know, that even in central Minnesota, where we are predominantly in our school district, we are 96% Anglo, that we still experience a significant degree of poverty and neglect and difficulty for families who are struggling. We're proud of the programs and the partnerships that we have established and the priority that we place on working together with organizations such as the private and parochial schools and their early care programs, with Head Start, the federally funded program that we're proud of, and with our coalition partnerships that are new and exciting for us. And even so, though our community is very proud of the work that we have done and proud of the programs that we've set up, we are still striving to serve many of our at-risk learners. We cannot meet all of their needs. And we believe unchecked pressures on our communities, those that we have seen in the last 4 years, may continue to widen what is already what we believe to be a widening achievement gap. I'd like to start talking about one of our programs is Early Childhood Family Education. District 181 ECFE is designed for our 0 to 5 population, and in our last school year, we served approximately 335 children, and these are some of the services that are provided. Weekly classes for infants and toddlers and three-year-olds. School readiness for 3 to 5-year-olds. Special family events. Community resource information. Kindergarten registration and early childhood screenings. Maybe considered to be common stuff. And Connie can talk a little bit about how often students are served or how often they experience services in their current programming.
Madam Chair and members, I want to say to start with that the heart of our ECFE program is the parents and the parent education, because we do recognize that parents are the best teachers and certainly the most influential teachers that children will ever have.
I just have to say, for what we do, because it's taped, is if you can say your name just before you talk, it's helpful to us.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Connie Nelson, and as I said, in ECFE, the parents are the heart of our program in parent education, and so many families with parents, we have so many single parents, you know the statistics around all those kinds of issues. It's just critical that we get as many parents into our programs as we can, especially in the early years, and so that is the heart of our program. On your paperwork that I handed out, it shows that back in 2003-2004 school year, we served 581 children. Since recent cuts, now we are down to, for this year, 335 students. So we have actually had to reduce the number of families that we serve. I guess that goes against some of the pressures and the problems that families face today in raising their children.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Ward?
I just want to make reference that when Connie talks about the paper that she handed out, it's this sheet from the... We don't have the PowerPoint in hard form yet. We knew that as you had hard form, you probably may not pay as attention as well, so we're going to get you the hard point and the PowerPoint in hard form later, but the sheet that she's referring to is right here.
So the Representative Ward starts with the rest of the story?
The rest of the story, correct. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll add that Steve Rizzillo, Assistant Superintendent of Schools in Brainerd Schools, that one of the points in asking to have this summary prepared for you on the white paper there is really to note that there has been a significant reduction in the number of seats, if you will, or spots, if you will, for early childhood family education program. We look at our community and our specific school district, which covers 750 square miles. We know that we have between, in any given year, we have between 2,200 and 2,400 children that are in the 0 to 5 range. And so reducing from nearly 600 students being able to be served to just over 330-plus students being served is a significant loss in the number of opportunities provided for children and some of those who most need the very services that early childhood family education programs can provide. I'll talk a little bit about a partnership that's new for us. We are, in our school district, graced with the opportunity to work hand-in-hand with Central Lakes Community College, which exists a mile away from one of our major campuses in our district. And it has been a partnership that has grown in the last couple of years that the Early Care and Education Center has been brought into partnership with the Brainerd School District and, again, Central Lakes College on their Brainerd campus. We have used and utilized, I think with some legislative help, joint powers agreements. And this joint powers agreement outlines the college as providing the use of a building, utilities, and a custodian, our school district through community ECFE programs, staffs the center with teachers, an office manager, and a director. It's been a wonderful marriage for us to try and increase opportunity and partnering in our K-14 resources. We know in times of tight dollars and stretched resources how important it is to have us thinking outside of the box, and we want to tell you that in times of reduction, we've even tried to do that with our neighbors across the river, if you will. Early Care and Education Center, our children enrolled at the center are usually those, or often those, of school district employees as well as employees of the college and of CLC students. The calendar for the center follows the annual calendars of the college and the school district to provide quality and consistent care. The college also enables the program to utilize students who work as study students who are earning credit and getting valuable real-life, real-time experience working in the center as additional staff.
Madam Chair, if I may interrupt and talk a little bit more about that. Again, my name is Connie Nelson, Madam Chair, members, and this is our first year with this partnership, and we recognize how important, along with obviously quality care for children, how important it is that those folks going into the early care field are well educated and have the best experiences they can have. And so not always so easy for those students to get out in the community and get those experiences. So we were presented with this opportunity, and so we're really doing a couple of things, providing consistent quality care, obviously, in this child care center, and also providing the students that are learning about children to have some direct contact with them and help plan curriculum and that kind of thing. We also have relationships with our Child Care Association and the Family Child Care Programs in our community, and they come to the college for their meetings, and so it's also really gotten the school district and our programs involved more closely with the rest of the early care folks.
School readiness, I might have inadvertently skipped ahead in the slide, but we'll move forward regardless. Again, Steve Rizidlo, Madam Chair, is it?
That's
keep
helpful.
On introducing.
Yeah, well, if you're going to go back and forth, because it's actually taped.
Okay.
So that would be helpful.
Okay,
thank you.
Our school readiness programs had their strongest focus on the following: family stability and school connections, social and emotional development, early literacy experiences, and vocabulary development. We cannot say enough about what we have learned with our K-2 population in the Brainerd schools in the last 5 years about the language acquisition and the vocabulary development of our young people. It is not necessarily only a question of a student or a young person's socioeconomic background as a determinant of how much language they walk in the school door with. we're finding more and more that students from all across and young people from all across our socioeconomic spectrum, if you will, are coming in with more limited language development than they had 5 years ago, than they had 10 years ago. We believe that there's emerging national research to corroborate that fact. And as you deliberate and prepare through this session and next meetings about where to place resources and where to consider most appropriate placement of resources may be, we would like to ask that you consider that it is not only a question of those students on free or reduced lunch, for example, or who qualify or have qualified for programs such as Head Start in the past, that should be considered as possibly needy in terms of having language or not having language. We are in an active research program in the Brainerd Schools. We call it the Literacy Collaborative Model, and one of the things that we are studying every year and every semester is the number of words that our kids know, the amount of language that they come to their kindergarten screenings with, the amount of language that they gain in the first 3 years. And though it is true that students from the most limited of means and the most limited of households are often also those with the most limited vocabularies and backgrounds and readiness to learn, it is not always true. And there is a growing segment of students who have well-connected families, who perhaps because of the influence of media or the lack of parental time to talk and read books and have conversations and listen to grandparents, are not coming in with as rich a vocabulary development as children have even 5 years ago.
Madam Chair, again, Connie Nelson, members. I may just add a couple of things. I have a couple of stories about school readiness and a couple of families. One of the things that we have done to ensure that our school readiness programs are able to serve at least as many children as we were serving a few years ago before budget cuts was to form a partnership between the early childhood special education program, so all of our classrooms have gone to be fully inclusive programs, which on a financial perspective, that has helped tremendously because the special education program will pay the fees for those children. We've also allowed some of the what we call the general public to be a part of our school readiness program, and again, their ability to pay fees helps to subsidize our programs. Rest of the story sheet here, there's some information on there about how difficult it is for families to come up with the fees that we charge and that we need to charge in order to continue to provide the program, the difficulties with financing and funding transportation needs for kids. But we have one little story I want to tell you. A little girl was referred for an assessment through special education, and she just missed the cutoff, yet we knew and the folks at Assessor knew that she needed to have something. And so she was put into the school readiness program. Her parents cannot afford to pay the fees, so we are able to waive the fees for that little girl. Her parents cannot transport her to the school, so we provide transportation. And without that opportunity, her parents would not have been able to get her into a school program. She came to us with, she was so shy and so nervous and had little language skills and that sort of thing. So from her mother's perspective, it's been a wonderful thing. The other thing that we're finding in school readiness when we have partnered with early childhood special education because some of their lack in funding and mandates, we have a speech clinician who is now serving 34 children on her caseload, where 3 or 4 years ago her caseload would have been 14 students, and there would have been parent involvement with that too. So we had a program with parent involvement for three-year-olds, 80% of those kids were in school without being on an IEP anymore. So we're concerned about our school readiness program and determined to keep it as good a program as it is, but are concerned about that. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, Steve Rizidlow, Assistant Superintendent Brainerd. School readiness, each family fills out a payment plan at enrollment, and fees are reduced for families who are unable to afford the cost. This year has been reduced or waived for 83 families. We continue to see a shifting balance between the amount of costs that we cover through the school district and the amount of costs that are covered by parents, our revenue coming in from parents has been reduced. Transportation to and from school is available on a limited basis from the school district's transportation service, but I would be remiss if I didn't indicate that those dollars are also being stretched in our district by the need to transport more and more special education students on special buses. And again, with a district that covers 750 square miles, we have a lot of busing to do. School readiness. We currently serve 186 children. We serve 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. And of those children served, 83 are considered at risk, 73 are on active IEPs, 88 receive transportation service. We are not unlike many districts whose overall population of students receiving special education services has continued to rise. We currently in our district have approximately 14.5%, or I believe that's an accurate figure from this year, 14+% of our students are on IEPs, and that number has risen about 5% in the last 10 years. That percentage, excuse me.
Madam Chair, if I may interrupt again, and members, Connie Nelson, the number that you see on the screen now, 88 children receiving transportation, is not going to coincide with what you see on your paper. The 88 number includes children with special education needs. The numbers on your paper represent children that fall more in what we consider the at-risk category. If you could clarify that.
Madam Chair, Steve Rizzitlow again now. Early childhood special education. Services for qualified children may be provided at home, school, or in a preschool setting. We offer some of the following services. We offer all of the following services: speech, occupational and physical therapy, hearing and vision, behavior management, and we link families. We try to actively link families to other existing agencies. Currently, 195 children are served in our early childhood special education program. Head Start, we have a tri-county program. The portion of that program in Brainerd, though it's not directly affiliated with School District 181, we do actively share some services back and forth, transportation, speech, and other services. And our Brainerd program currently serves 140 children in their early childhood centers, age 3 to 5. Head Start works September through May. They have approximately 125 or so days in their program. Early Head Start serves children to 3 and pregnant women year-round. Their focus is on education, health, parent involvement, and family services. There is no cost for this program. Priority is given to families who meet age and income guidelines. And Head Start has seen a small reduction in their funding from the federal government over the last 2 years. Brainerd Lakes Area Early Childhood Coalition. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Tammy for a few slides.
Madam Chair, members, Tammy Slippy, coordinator of Brainerd Lakes Area Early Childhood Coalition. It is just so exciting to be here. We received funding through the Initiative Foundation located in Little Falls, whom I understand you're going to be hearing from after us, January of 2006. There's, I believe, currently about 67 coalitions and growing around the state of early childhood coalitions. And so we are one of the fortunate communities to receive funding through the Initiative Foundation. Basically, what we are trying to accomplish is, being a coalition, we have a number of the community sections involved in the coalition. We have business, we have other nonprofits, we have different school district employees, ministerial association, law enforcement, media, seniors, and healthcare providers. So it truly is a collaboration, a coalition, to build a brighter future for our youngest citizens. We have 4 priorities in our coalition, and that is to increase father involvement. And some of the things that we've done with that is Fathers Read Every Day. It's a FRED. Some of you might be familiar with that program. Wonderful program that involves fathers in early literacy with their younger children. We're doing events, ready, set, and go, events that provide an opportunity for child care providers and kindergarten teachers and other people that are obviously working with younger children to increase dialogue and communication so that we can enrich and enhance the experience for our young children when they're entering kindergarten. And those have been really successful. Our last event, Go event, is coming up next month. We also serve, as Steve had mentioned, you know, our district is very large geographically, so we also have outlying areas within the district that seem to not receive as much attention or outreach. So that's one of our priorities, too, is to be able to maybe provide events, different opportunities for those folks that are living out in that outlying area of the district. And currently we have a survey that was sent to about 600 households to see what their needs are as far as early childhood activities. Offer fun family events, pizza night, and fun things like that at the different schools. Last fall there was one out in St. Matthias, which is a very small community in our county, and just an opportunity for families to come and have lots of fun together. And also we're looking at offering an educational kit for first-time dads. We're looking at offering a daddy boot camp, which is a licensed training program that encourages fathers to become more involved with their infants. And it's really a neat concept. It's a mentoring type of concept where you have the veteran dads of, you know, 2 or 3 month old babies mentoring a brand new dad with a newborn. So we're looking at hoping to get some more funding for that. And then, of course, fundraising is always important to continue our good work within the coalition. And I believe I already talked about some of our accomplishments. Clearly, we have many more that's in the works, but a very, very active volunteer. I mean, it's pretty much all volunteer. I'm a minimum amount of hours, paid staff. Otherwise, it is clearly a volunteer effort, and it's amazing, as you all know, what volunteers can do to move forward in helping our youngest citizens.
Madam Chair, members, Steve Rizzillo again. We would like to talk about increasing our outreach, as Tammy and Connie have both said. In the Brainerd Lakes area, families can access early childhood education, school readiness, Head Start, early childhood special education, coalition programming, and partnerships such as the Early Care and Education Center at Central Lakes College, which we've spoken of. Our concern, however, is that we reach less than half of all children under the age of 5, many of which would be classified as high-risk or certainly at-risk learners. In order to ensure that all children enter school ready to learn and ready to meet the demands of the world of the future and the requirements of our schools by law today, we believe that more work still needs to be done. Making early childhood available for all children, we have said that we hope that we can expand our outreach and our programming in central Minnesota. It would greatly benefit our youngest kids to have increased involvement and support from volunteers and from businesses and scholarship organizations. We hope that you will consider legislation to be passed to help ensure financial support for participation in proven programs. We believe that we need in rural Minnesota opportunities for all of our kids, regardless of background, adequate and consistent funding in order to support and maintain them. And here is an issue which we really feel we need to stress as a greater Minnesota concern, a concern outside the metro, that available and affordable transportation be there for all learners. And our transportation dollars have been severely stretched, as I indicated before, with the growth in the number of special education students which must be transported, and we do not have a never-ending supply of dollars in our transportation accounts, and it takes away from some of that which we might offer otherwise. Some of our best infrastructure for transportation is the school district's contracted busing service in our outstate Minnesota district. Implementation of child care licensure requirements to include research-supported curriculum targeting our youngest learners. We've been asking throughout our whole presentation about what you might do, but we hope that you will consider offering and supporting legislation to better meet the needs of all of our kids, regardless of their ability or their geographic location or their family status or economic means. Enhance and expand the proven initiatives that are out there supporting our early education efforts. Fully fund childhood learning initiatives and help make all day, every day kindergarten a reality in the future of Minnesota school districts. And we understand that there is and probably will continue to be much dialogue about the issue of all day, every day kindergarten. And we understand that it could come at a significant cost of available resources. We would be again irresponsible to our kids and our families if we didn't say that while we also support the growth, if we can, of early education pre-K environments, we would like your consideration and support of all-day, everyday kindergarten to grow in our district. In our district, we are currently serving many of our students, but we are not serving all of them, and we would like to. And that concludes the that portion of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that was very informative, very helpful. I know that some of the members have questions. Representative Ward, did you want to do some comments?
I just, like, Madam Chair, members, I just want you to be aware of the fact that we did finish on time. I wanted you to know that.
Thank you. Well, we'll take questions for a couple minutes. You know, I have a question, a couple questions just off the bat, and then I know Representative Murphy has a question. I think Representative Kranz has a question. One thing we struggle here at the legislature with, and particularly in this committee with, is how you define at risk. So could you tell me how your district defines a child that is at risk?
Madam Chair and members, my name is Connie Nelson. I think I can answer that question. Our programs also, we have an early childhood screening program, and that program is also managed within the school readiness and ECSE program. At-risk children are typically children whose maybe both parents work, and they don't have many opportunities to be in a school setting before kindergarten. They're children who, when they come through screening, some of the screening interview with a parent may indicate some needs. Parents separated. Children may have language delays. They may have delays that show up at the screening in other areas. Families whose parents are, their economics is diminished, but perhaps parents who have learning problems themselves, single parent families, and kids who, you know, just aren't in there with other kids and getting the kinds of experiences that kids need in order to be successful in kindergarten.
So it's kind of a broad general definition.
Yeah,
does your district keep it in writing, or do you just kind of?
Well, we actually have a list for screeners to use when we're doing our early childhood screening. And as they screen the child and then interview the parents, they talk to the parents about the kinds of experiences their children are having, their family stability and those kinds of things, and ask them, you know, what their concerns are for their child, what would help them. And so it's really done on an individual basis, but yet there is a list that we have that identifies what we would call risk factors.
Good. Thank you. That's helpful. And I was also very impressed with your coalition and how that's come together and the model that you're using. I think we'll go to questions. It was Representative Mary Murphy, right? Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Residlo, you said that we should fund proven programs. Would you define proven programs?
I would say that we have federally proven programs. We would say that Head Start, though it's not your funding responsibility, is a proven program. We would say that our early childhood family education programs, school readiness programs, that have shown to offer results to children. And there may need to be some dialogue from you or with you about what that idea of proven means. But the reason that we've kind of thrown that language into the presentation today, Representative Murphy, if you will, is to note what we feel is an important feature of some of the legislation proposed that we're hearing talked about, which is targeted assistance up to $4,000 per child. And our emphasis there is really to say that we believe that there ought to be some accountability standard for that $0 to $4,000 scholarship or targeted assistance. And we would none of us argue against resources going to some of the neediest children. But we would also want there to be a significant talk and dialogue about what is the responsible use of those resources and how will we gauge that. We have many programs in our region, and I don't know that we would put them all on the same plane as far as some of the language experiences that they put before young children, some of the time that they might spend absolutely in reading activities, in language acquisition activities, and I think that a dialogue regarding what would be the standard for use of that targeted assistance would be warranted if legislation in that regard moves forward.
Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, that sounds like we have a great responsibility to have some kind of a scale or chart or something of what, or point system of what a program contains and what we hope it will accomplish. And I have one more question, Mr. Residlo, Superintendent Residlo. You said that you still had some students that weren't in the program that you would like to serve, or you would like to be serving some students that you aren't now. Are those people on a waiting list, or are you doing outreach to find more, or are you are they just lined up at the schoolhouse door and close it when you're full?
I would say that we are doing outreach, and we are recognizing that there are families that don't reach out to schools. Parents who've had difficult experiences in schools themselves for a host of reasons may not be able to or may not want to reach out to schools. We know that there's a population, just by the law of averages, of students that we were serving just a few years ago that we are no longer able to serve. And we are identifying many of those families through a little bit later now than we were, through some of our readiness for kindergarten and our pre-kindergarten screenings. I hope that answered your question. The Coalition and Early Childhood both do some wonderful outreach programs. As Tammy indicated, the Initiative Foundation's work at pulling together a coalition is helping to coordinate some of that outreach. And we are getting better than we were even a few years ago, and look forward to getting better still. But there are still some who are not identified, and some who are identified who are not able to be served. When we have an early childhood or a school readiness or a family education program that has tuition and revenue as part of its way of existing, we are taking some paying seats now that we weren't taking in years past. So some students of limited means are no longer being served that were just a few short years ago.
Thank you.
I think we'll have one more question, then we'll need to move to our next testifier. We'll also have some closing comments from Representative Ward. I just wanted to comment on your the first part of your question, is I think it gets the heart of what's going to be the debate here at the legislature on early childhood, which is sort of the allowance of scholarship idea versus the funding existing programs idea. And I think it's something that our committee takes very seriously, and it's very interesting for us to see where people are weighing in. And I'm glad you're weighing in, because we want to have a very thorough discussion on this. And as we struggle, or as some people are challenging us to think in different ways, we need to remember what programs are serving kids well now. So with that, Representative Kranz, you have a question?
Thanks, Madam Chair. To the testifiers, and I have a short follow-up for Representative Ward as well. Representative Murphy took one of my questions, by the way. I want to put that on the record.
So
I was just up in Brainerd. I have a son who plays hockey, and we were up there for the Brainerd tournament, and Brainerd, the whole town was so busy and hopping, we ended up having to stay in a hotel in Cross Lake, which isn't that bad, and those of you can appreciate it's another 25 miles north of where we were coming from, but it was very scenic and it went well. But my question, I think, has to do with not only a statement, and I hope there's a question in here somewhere. I was encouraged, and you piqued my interest when you started talking about measurability of your programs, where the kids coming in know X number of words. And so I think a lot of us are really looking at accountability in this area, and I'm encouraged to hear you kind of speak to those things. And I would encourage more of that dialogue as we move forward. And so I'm going to let you guys off the hook. But Representative Ward, I'm a high school teacher as well, as I know you're in that profession as well, and I know the great impact it has on my suburban school district. But maybe you can just take a minute or two and speak to the value that ECFE programs like this has in your neck of the woods.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kranz, thank you for the question. I came down here as a secondary teacher. I'm leaving as an early childhood supporter. I'm not leaving, by the way. I'm just teasing. but you make a great point. We in the secondary often forget about how important the early childhood pre-K and K through 3 folks are to set the foundation, as we've always talked about, the foundation, so that we can have success within our secondary operations. And so I'm a firm supporter and believer of birth through 5 and pre and K through 3. And that's where I think we need to make the investment. We can't forget about the other systems, and we can't forget about all education opportunities for all children and all students, but my thought processes have been awakened. And I just want to take a minute.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Ward.
Chair and members, for having us down here, for allowing us to present our program and our needs, and from a rural standpoint, from an outstate standpoint, and hopefully, we learn some stuff. You learn some stuff today, and we learn some stuff, and you will get the hard copy of the PowerPoint as well. I promise you that. So thank you for having us. Thank you for the test for us for coming down here. You did a wonderful job, remarkable job, and thank you very much. And I know Representative Goddard and his folks are going to follow with a bang also.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much for being here and for taking the time and sharing your programs with us.
Thank you.
We'll have a transition moment, and Representative Gottwald, if you want to come forward. Members, I think it's helpful to hear the rural perspective and hear about what other programs are doing in other areas. I think we get to know our own districts and what's happening in our own place, and very good to have a different perspective. PowerPoint up here.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kranz.
While they're getting the PowerPoint and my Brainerd folks haven't left yet, to my Brainerd contingency, please work on getting some money for the ice arena to get that other rink so I can stand up on top, get the railing put in, because that awesome. Second rink, it needs a little help. So I'm just going to put a plug in for the Hockey Association up there. Thank you.
Always lobbying. True politician. Welcome to the committee, Representative Gottwald. If you could state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Steve Gottwald, representing Lake District 15A. And the people I have with me, I'm very honored to have with me. I want to thank them for making the trip down because I think it is good for our committee to get a perspective from outstate. And so with me this evening, Kathy Galswick, who's president of the Central Minnesota Initiative Foundation. In her presentation, she's going to do a little explaining about Initiative Foundation. So if you're not familiar with them, you will be by the time the presentation's done, and there will be a test. So as we talk about assessments, keep that in mind. With me also is Chris Klempel. She's a family owner with Park Industries. They're a granite tool and technology company in St. Cloud. It's a fascinating business. And I think what you're going to hear today is, as much as public programs play a role in early childhood, there's certainly stakeholders beyond that, and many of those players in our communities are pitching in to support parents and caregivers in the role of developing early learners. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kathy and Chris.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Kathy Galswick. I'm the president of the Initiative Foundation. I have Chris Klempel with me, and you'll be hearing from her in a moment. So, first of all, a huge thank you, too, for the opportunity to talk about this important topic. When Representative Gottwald invited us to come, he suggested kind of three areas. First of all, the broader topic of the community and economic development perspective on investing in quality care and education of our youngest kids. Secondly, an overview of Minnesota's early childhood initiative from a statewide perspective. And then third, some examples of what's going on at the local level. It was fun to hear from the Brainerd folks. They're part of our early childhood initiative work as well, as you've heard, and I happen to live in that community, so it was great to start out with a specific example like that. But we'll back up a little bit and take a broader perspective first, and then come back to some more stories for you as we move forward. I'm sure you're all hearing a lot about this question of why invest in early childhood. I'm guessing you've also heard much about the research of Art Rolnick and Rob Grunewald from the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank. We're really fortunate in Minnesota to have these folks thinking about this question and giving us some good, solid information. In summary, what their reports indicate is that for $1 invested in early childhood education, there yields a $12 savings to the public and the taxpayers and all of that as it pertains to reducing juvenile delinquency, special education, teen pregnancy, those kinds of issues. And if you add the private benefit along with that, it's a total of $17 as a combined benefit. And that comes from the Perry Preschool Longitudinal Study, and can get additional background information for anyone that would be interested in that. So why invest in early childhood? All of our kids need a healthy start in life to grow into strong, productive adults. They need a level playing field to compete in the global marketplace. And I truly believe it's the most important investment that we can make into our community. When I tell you about our foundation a little later, you'll understand that we're involved in the business of economic development as well. And I truly believe that early childhood is the most important economic development strategy for the state of Minnesota. It builds our greatest resource, our human capital, our future entrepreneurs, our future community leaders, our future taxpayers, our future workforce. We are fortunate in Minnesota to have a relatively high median income compared to other states, but we need to take a look at what's happening with the trends here. A highly educated workforce is crucial to our economy. We already know that wages of a worker with an undergraduate degree exceed those of a worker with a high school degree by over 60%. Wages of a worker with an advanced degree exceed the wages of someone with a high school diploma by 100%. So we need to be looking at the quantity and the quality of the jobs that we're creating, especially as we think about the fact that baby boomers are retiring and our workforce is aging. Labor force quality as determined by education has stagnated and has already reduced American productivity and growth. So what does that mean for the future? It means that our continuing competitiveness in a state and even as a country is threatened if we don't take care of these youngest children and pay attention to preparing them to learn so that they can be those entrepreneurs and that labor force that we need to be competitive into the future. We also need to consider special issues related to parents in the workforce, and you heard a little bit about this from our friends from Brainerd, but here are a few numbers for you. 79% of Minnesota's moms are working or going to school now, so that means they need to deal with child care and options for how their kids are cared for while they're away from home. 20% of our parents report that child care needs interfere with them getting or keeping a job. In one survey, 37% of parents indicated that they had lost time or income in the past 6 months due to child care needs. And 83% said that they didn't have a backup plan for kids when they're sick. Chris, in fact, had to go to her third backup plan to deal with her own children so that she could be down here with us today. So this is real-life stuff that folks are dealing with every day. Obviously, when workers have reliable, quality early education and care arrangements, employers report reduced turnover, lower absenteeism, increased productivity. On a national level, it's reported that employee absenteeism as a result of poor quality education or care costs American businesses an estimated $3 billion a year. So we're talking some real money here, some real impact on our businesses. What we have seen is as businesses recognize these issues and these opportunities, they're finding ways to get involved at the most grassroots level in our communities. And that's been a really exciting thing. Here are just a few examples of what's going on in rural Minnesota right now. Murray County has a family-friendly business project where they're receiving, they're providing to each business a container of free books that the employers and the customers can use just to encourage reading to young kids. A very simple idea that's making a difference. Through our business financing program, we recently financed a Lakes Mobile Dentistry in the Deerwood area, which is a mobile dental clinic that specializes in serving an uninsured and underinsured kids. The Kimball area has businesses sponsor child care provider kindergarten readiness resources. I just read recently South Dakota has taken a significant portion of their economic development budget and to fund a preschool education project in partnership with the United Way because they believe that it was such an important economic development strategy. And you're going to hear more about St. Cloud and Sartell and some of those other local efforts in a minute. But first I'll back up again and just provide a little bit of background about the Minnesota Early Childhood Initiative. Began 4 years ago. It's an initiative of the six Minnesota Initiative Foundations. How about that for a tongue twister? Some of you may not be familiar with the Initiative Foundation, so I'll just take a moment to tell you that we're regional foundations created in the mid-80s with tremendous support of the McKnight Foundation, the largest private foundation in Minnesota. It was an experiment in grassroots philanthropy based on the premise that local people know best what the needs and opportunities are. They're going to be the ones to ultimately carry out the work, so let's empower people at the local level to give back to community. Well, we're getting close to our 21st year now as regional foundations across the state. Entire state is covered except the 7-county metro area. Each one is a freestanding regional foundation with its own board and staff and programs. And this model is unique to Minnesota. It doesn't exist anywhere else in the country or the world that we know of. So it's a really special thing going on here. We do our work through basically four things. We make gap loans along with local banks to help businesses start up and expand that create quality jobs. We make grants to not-for-profit efforts like some of the things you're hearing about today. We operate special initiatives and programs that build the capacity of people at the community level to make their communities healthier, to improve community and economic development work. And finally, we offer a range of donor services and fund development things to enable us to do that work. The Early Childhood Initiative is the first formal program that the six initiative foundations launched together as we sat back and thought about what's an area that we really need to have some significant impact in. And 4 years ago, we launched this program to mobilize citizens around the priority of young children. The mission of the initiatives is to ensure that all young children thrive and have a healthy life of learning, achieving, and succeeding. And the primary strategy for doing that is to create and support these local coalitions, like you've heard about from the Brainerd Group. I'll mention that there is a white booklet in your packet that you can glance through later that tells you more about the model and has some great examples and case studies of the work. But I'm going to take you just real quickly through the steps of this. First, a coalition is formed. And as we heard from the Brainerd presentation, we require that it represent all aspects of the community, not just the usual suspects, if you will, of folks that you might think of that are involved with early care and education of kids. So we do require business, and you can see all of the pieces on the wheel there, and there's an extra copy of that at the back of your handout in case it's not legible in the PowerPoint. Law enforcement, the faith community, all aspects of the community. And what we do then is the Initiative Foundations provide support to these coalitions. It's a model for community action and planning. And this next slide gives you just a quick overview of that. We form and train the coalition. We provide some funding to them to hire a local coordinator like Tammy Phillippe that you heard from. That coalition then helps lead, first of all, a community profile or survey to take a look at what's going on now, what are the assets we have, what are the needs, the gaps, the things that we need to deal with. And then they hold a major community event called a Speak Out and begin that dialogue and increasing awareness about our youngest kids. Following that, there's a visioning session where the community gathers together, and we've had, in some of the communities, there might be 100 people, in other communities, 200 people, which, you know, when you're in a town of 1,000 or 5,000, that's a lot of folks, again, from all sectors of the community that come together and go through a facilitated process of identifying what's our preferred future for our youngest kids, and then identifying 3 to 5 action areas or priority goal areas where they develop and carry out action plans. You've heard some examples of those, and you'll be hearing some more. Often they relate to child care, they relate to literacy, kindergarten preparation, lots of stuff around supporting and coming alongside parents and resources for business and those kinds of things. The Initiative Foundations are in it for the long haul with these groups. We support them by providing training to those coalitions. We help facilitate those community meetings. We provide some grant funds to help them with the expenses for the process. We provide some grant support to help them implement those follow-up projects, resource and referral. We provide networks for the coalitions to connect with each other and work together over time, because we really believe this is the best model for change. It puts that business of identifying the plan, carrying out the plan, measuring and evaluating the plan in the hands of local people across all sectors of the community. So now, at this point, we have 64 coalitions in Minnesota, and this map is also on the back of your packet, just in case it's not legible for you. Great representation across the state of Minnesota. A variety of partners facilitate these coalitions. Sometimes it happens through the school district. Other times it might be a local United Way, or it might be a local government entity that actually is the fiscal host or the grantee for the work. So in those 64 coalitions now, there's a couple thousand people involved, thousands more that have come to those community events and visionings, participating in surveys. A good 200 local projects have taken place, and I don't have a number for you about the number of kids that have been impacted from the work and the families that have been impacted, but it's a lot. We're getting into the smallest communities, the most remote parts of rural Minnesota with this process. And often the projects are very low cash, lots of volunteer time, lots of energy going into connecting the dots and hooking the resources up. A few examples, again, the literacy campaigns, lots of building awareness just about this importance of caring for our youngest kids, bringing people like Art Rolnick out to speak and share information. Often there are projects around coming alongside local child care providers, giving them resources, helping them with professional development and training so that they can be the best they can be. This is a recent example. This is in the back of your packet as well. This is a little guide for parents and family members and teachers and caregivers about getting kids ready for kindergarten, and it's also been produced in Spanish, and that's available to folks that are interested. One of our key partners in this whole process is the Ready for K organization, and I know that I believe you've heard from them already, and so I'll just be very brief on that. A very important nonprofit based here in the Twin Cities that has a mission to assure that every young child in Minnesota enters kindergarten encouraged, supported, and prepared for learning. They have the priorities that you can see on the slide there around supporting parents, promoting quality, increasing access, producing results. They're active in public policy, have an agenda for 2007 that they're working on, and I know they're in a lot of the dialogue about the ways to address these issues and opportunities around our youngest kids. So they've been an important partner in this initiative. There are a number of other partners and funders listed on the next two slides, and the thing that I want to point out about that is it's a public-private partnership. at the state level as well as at the local level in terms of the people that are bringing resources, ideas, expertise, money to the table, and that has been an incredibly powerful part of this initiative. You know, I think back 4 years, we were not having these kinds of conversations, certainly not having them in greater Minnesota, and now it really does feel like a movement. There are just local people all across the state that are excited about what can be with regard to the care and education of our youngest kids. Speaking of local efforts, it is my pleasure to introduce to you Chris Klimple. Chris is a member of a family-owned business in St. Cloud Park Industries. They employ 300 people. For us, that's a huge business, a very significant employer in rural Minnesota. They're the largest stone-working equipment manufacturer in the North American market, and they've been great partners. Chris personally is a mother of two, resident of the Sartell area, and so she's actually been active in two of our coalitions, the St. Cloud area and the Sartell-St. Stephen area. And so I'll turn it over to Chris at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Pardon me. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Chris Klimple from Park Industries. I am very pleased to be here. I think I'm going to switch with Kathy, though, so that I can look at my notes and not have to lean over. And I have a little visual, too.
Whatever works here, we're good with. Okay. Nice visual.
Thank you. What I wanted to start out by saying is that we are here in our big shoes talking about our youngest citizens. I don't mean the school-age ones, because they're, like, right here. I'm talking about the very youngest ones in the first 4 years. And they can't come to speak to the legislature. I almost brought my 4-year-old, but you wouldn't have wanted that. I just brought her old shoe. But thank you very much for inviting me to your party. I come on behalf of the Central Minnesota United Way, and wearing two hats, that of a mom and of a business owner. And I'm going to talk briefly about the United Way and then some special initiatives that where the United Way has partnered and joined the Minnesota Early Childhood Coalition and have formed a coalition in St. Cloud. Am I in the right spot? All right. United Way's Success by Six partnership was established in 2005, and we joined in 2006, the Early Childhood Initiative. And it has been funded by both public and private sectors. So the United Way's initiative is called Success by Six. Ultimately, all children need to be prepared to succeed, and to do that they need community support to address the needs of children. The folks from Brainerd did a fabulous job of explaining all of the struggles and the on-the-ground work that they are doing in early childhood education. I participated in that myself in St. Cloud and in Sartell. The goals of the Success by Six are simple. We want to increase access to resources, increase education, and improve our investment. And there are action teams on the Success by Six team around each of these goals, and they involve both businesses and nonprofits. So now, I'm going to put my parents' hat on for a minute and bring us back to the world of our youngest citizens and quote a few lines from a very popular book. Everything I needed to know, I learned in kindergarten. If you humor me for a minute, I'll just quote you a few lines. Share everything. Play fair and take turns. Don't hit people. Clean up your own mess. Say you're sorry when you hurt somebody. Wonder. Remember, the little seed in the styrofoam cup. The roots go down and the plant goes up, and nobody really knows how or why, but we're all like that. And when you go out in the world, watch for traffic, hold hands, and stick together. The truth is that young children need these skills before kindergarten, because we now know that children are uniquely teachable in some critical areas up to age 5. And the Brainerd folks have lots of research they can quote about early brain development, and Art Rolnick cited it too. So I'm pretty certain that these experts know what they're talking about. And when they build an early foundation, learning begets learning. But on the other hand, once children fall behind, if they arrive unprepared for kindergarten, they're likely to remain behind for the rest of their lives. I'm not a developmental psychologist, but I, as a mother of two, this scientist's account of what a tiny baby, an infant, needs to learn rings true to me. And I'll quote, "To be most successful in school, young children must master a variety of complicated, interrelated concepts. A child must have a sense of curiosity. That's the wonder in the seed in the little cup. Persistence, confidence, and self-control. Don't hit people. At the same time, the child must be able to communicate clearly, say you're sorry, and be able to engage others in conversation while balancing the others and the needs of the group. I'd call that play fair and take turns. Frankly, these are demanding concepts. Demanding, so demanding that many adults still struggle with these kindergarten concepts, especially when they're translated to the workplace. They may be called soft skills, as opposed to academic skills, which we test much more often, but they are important throughout life, and they're best learned, we know now, as early as possible. Another part of learning is reading to children and early literacy, and the Brainerd folks talked a lot about that, and I'll talk a little bit more in a moment. Now I'm going to put on my other hat, business owner. For us at Park Industries, qualities such as motivation, responsibility, teamwork, communication, and flexibility are essential for every associate at our company. We're a high-tech manufacturing firm that recruits and hires people with a variety of talents, machinists, welders, engineers, and Harvard MBAs. And every one of them understands that the customer is the reason that we are in business. That competency is tough to find, but we do know that it relies on lifelong learning. And finding people with these core competencies is not easy. It's worth noting that in St. Cloud, the Central Minnesota businesses, including manufacturers, are partnering with our workforce center to create something called Workforce U. And adult students at the Workforce U focus on the soft skills that folks lack to succeed in the workplace, in the job market. And when these folks graduate, they graduate with a certificate of employability. This is a great program and a great asset to our community, but wouldn't it be really great to prevent the need for this sort of thing in the first place? To prepare our youngest citizens to succeed, ready to succeed in kindergarten and thus in life? I recently read about another concrete example about how developing non-cognitive or soft skills sooner is a much better investment than waiting to remedy it later. A Nobel laureate economist named James Heckman wrote an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal sometime back last year, and this guy started out studying the economic benefits of retraining displaced steelworkers. And he ultimately concluded that the best investment was a totally different age group, early childhood. Same conclusion. The earlier the learning happens, the better set up children are to succeed in the workplace. And the biggest bang for the buck is helping those children who are most in need and whose parents often lack the success skills to succeed themselves. Business and education go hand in hand, and our expectations of both have evolved. In my grandparents' time, a solid education was completing the eighth grade. And my parents, who are approximately boomers, earned degrees beyond high school, and that was a huge leap. Today, young adults routinely add 2 years, and many of them add 4 years to their education, and professionals take even more training. We willingly spend thousands and millions of dollars advancing education to compete in the global economy. The stakes are high. When I got ready to present today, I asked my father, Tom, who is our CEO, to share some thoughts, and I thought that these summed up the issue quite nicely. When will it be time, and I quote, "When will it be time to mandate pre-K education? We all see the need right now. What are we waiting for? Of course it costs money, and the resources are limited, but the best information we have shows that early investment generates the highest returns. It is crucial to the long-term health of our economy and our citizens. I'd like to talk just for a few minutes about some other things that we have been doing on the local level through the Success by Six Coalition, because a couple of them are really near and dear to my heart, and you asked me to come, so I'll tell you. What are we doing about this on a local level as a business and other private sector folks? The Day of Caring is a big hit at the United Way every year in the fall. This year, Park Industries Associates built a ramp for a home at a child with special needs, and I was at the YMCA the day that volunteers were reading to children in the child care center there. People just love helping children. Around the St. Cloud area, United Way at Work makes presentations to help raise awareness of the needs of young children to people that may not have children in their lives right now. And then, thirdly, I'd like to tell you about the Imagination Library. My mother, Joyce, played a large role in bringing the Imagination Library to central Minnesota. In a nutshell, the Imagination Library mailed age-appropriate books each month to all children from birth to age 5, in their name, to their house, for free. It's way cool. Kids love getting stuff in their name. To offset the cost of this program, Park Industries underwrites the cost of the books for all of our associates' families, their children, and their grandchildren. And there are about a dozen companies in St. Cloud that are doing this, and we've only been doing the Imagination Library for less than 2 years. It's a real success story. We've actually calculated that we've reached over 8,000 children in less than 2 years, and that is what we figure about half of the population in our service area for the United Way. And a recent survey of the United Way of Imagination Library parents say that 94% of parents are now and grandparents are now reading more to their children than they were before. And that includes people who don't have books and people who have books. Everybody's reading more. Sometimes public health nurses and other folks that make home visits report that the only books they see in a home are Imagination Library books. And literacy has to start really early. I'm sorry to say, but a friend of mine is a kindergarten teacher, and she said sometimes you ask a child to open a book, and she goes, she doesn't know how to read. She's not reading right now. She's just starting kindergarten, but she doesn't even know what a book is. Imagine how that child feels sitting there next to her peers. And imagine what the kindergarten teacher must be thinking. And finally, the Success by Six Daily Reader Program is another part of our initiative, and we bring community volunteers from business and beyond to read to children in Head Start locations and early childhood centers. And the goal is modeling reading, that adults like to read, that reading is good, and that you should read. I'm also active in the Sartell St. Stephen Early Childhood Coalition. This coalition has just gotten off the ground in 2006, and you can see the areas that we are working on. They center around access to resources through a library and a resource guide, and in another year or so, we'll have more success stories, I expect.
Thanks, Kathy. Thank you, Chris. Madam Chair, members, Kathy Galswick. Just in closing, would like to tell you that we really appreciate the time here today. I hope this has been helpful in giving you an overview of the community and economic development perspective, the Minnesota Early Childhood Initiative, and some real examples of what's going on kind of at the ground level and the grassroots level. So thank you very much, and we would be pleased to answer questions.
Thank you, and I hope the members have some questions and are thinking about this. For me, personally, you know, as a suburbanite, when people talk about the myths, it took me a long time to understand. I never knew what that was, because in our area, myth is not a common acronym at all. So we appreciate you being here today, and I also want to say I appreciate the props and your passion. And the books, and Goodnight Gorilla is one of my all-time favorite books. And if you all know, the animals follow him home, and they turn out the lights, and they all say goodnight. We might have to pass that one around, maybe. And we really like that one.
Yeah. Thank you. Remember what it would be like to get one of these when you're four?
name.
It's a big deal, and that's and I can see even from the books you're doing, you can read them over and over and get a different message from them each time. I was going to ask a question about, in terms of your role of business and the private partner, private-public partnership. That's something we're trying to work on here at the legislature. Is exactly, are you on the MIF board, or could you talk more about your role and how that works?
Chris Klimple again, Madam Chair and Committee. I am not on the MIF board. I am involved with the Central Minnesota United Way, and I am on the Early Childhood Coalition for Sartell, so I'm much more grassroots. As Kathy's model shows, they try and get to the place where it's closest to the ground, I guess.
Well, that's something we're trying to do here, too, is often legislators are at sort of a 50,000-foot level, and it's very hard to get to the ground and know the investments we're making where they should be on a strategic level. But it certainly seems that MIFs are doing a lot of the good work out there and the hard work to bring organizations together. Members, are there questions? We must have a question from... I'm just going to call you Representative Winkler. Representative Ward, sitting next to Representative Winkler.
I'd be honored also, Madam Chair. Thank you. Can I ask you how much that costs your business to operate your Imagination Library, and how much the other businesses?
It's $35 a year per child. And quite frankly, you can't buy that kind of goodwill with an associate's family. To show that you as a business are concerned about the well-being of the spouse at home, the children, just generally speaking, it's a win-win. I have a friend who's got a, perhaps Steve or Kathy could list some of the other businesses. I don't have them off the top of my head. But I know that a friend of mine commented that, you know, he's a Harvard MBA, and he said, you know, I'm a smart guy, but I don't have time to choose these books for my kids, so I'm really glad that you guys do it.
Good. Representative Gottwald, did you have a comment?
Madam Chair and members, you know, one of the exciting things about this and one of the reasons I wanted to bring Kathy and Chris down to talk to you is, number one, the MIFs are an amazing model, as Kathy mentioned earlier, one of a kind in the whole world. And what they're really doing is creating community-responsive and community-sensitive models. You know, we're involving people like Chris in creating locally. This is stuff that's been created by people locally for their kids, for their businesses, for their community. It's not something that we're doing from the 50,000-foot level to them. And it's tapping the resources not only of government, but also of private sector businesses and human resources, so the time, talent, treasure piece. And because you're tapping into all of that, people get it. All of those people are bought in as stakeholders. They're contributing to it, and they're getting something back out of it in the quality of the early childhood education that's going on. And I hope that's something we keep in mind as a committee as we consider the various proposals before us.
You know, one question, I have another question, and I hope that one of the members has a question, is that why don't they do them in the metro area? Because McKnight focuses on rural projects? Or it seems like if we could do the rural and the metro, then we would have, it would give us as legislators who are statewide, a statewide picture all at one time, and it's more fragmented here in the metro.
Madam Chair, members, and Kathy Galswick, when McKnight launched the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, it very much was to get charitable activity going in greater Minnesota. And as I mentioned, our work is much broader than early childhood in terms of community and economic development. I do know, with regard to the Early Childhood Initiative, that there has been a specific conversation about your question, exploration of some different options in terms of getting some sort of a metro area early childhood effort or efforts going. I'm afraid I'm not up to date on that. I could find that out, but that has definitely been identified as a gap.
Well, it's very you're doing such a great job. I think that's we would like to, you know, the best form of sincerest form of flattery is right. So we would like to emulate your model. I think it would be, if you've done a very good job with it. Members, any other questions? Well, we want to thank you for being here today, and I hope you'll keep in touch. Representative Gottwald has been a very interesting member of the committee, good member of the committee in terms of he's chairing a parent involvement group. and that's an initiative that he is working on, as well as Representative Ward. Of course, they're two of our favorite members here today. But we appreciate you bringing your folks down, both of you, and thank you for the opportunity, and hope you will keep in touch. And as we are vetting our funding proposals and looking at them, I hope you'll work with your representatives to let them know your thoughts. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Members, with that, we will meet next Tuesday to work on bills. Next Thursday, we'll have the ABE hearing. And with that, we are adjourned.